Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Jesse is there, the winner usually sticks around, even if the groundhog doesn't see his shadow. Pucks are tiny, folk tables, you know. Well, that's what I've always thought about religion. Lately, I can just feel the entropy after a recent unexpected passing. Thinking about that existential depression, I've been really thinking about deliverance now.
That's Deliverance, the first song off the latest album from Brooklyn-based singer-songwriter Andrew Choi, also known as St. Lennox. Years before releasing his first album as St. Lennox in 2014, Choi studied concert violin while growing up in the Midwest and in pre-college programs at Juilliard. Once in college, he ended up pursuing a PhD in philosophy at Ohio State. After that, he made another turn to law, to a law degree from NYU, which led to his current day job as an attorney in Manhattan. But in his off time, Choi has continued to write and perform autobiographical indie pop as St. Lennox. His new album is called 10 Songs of Worship and Praise for Our Tumultuous Times. And Rolling Stone describes it as, quote, maybe his most moving collection to date. St. Lennox joins me now, or Andrew, welcome to All of It.
Thank you for having me.
So the number 10 seems to be a theme for you. Your albums before this one were 10 songs about memory and hope, 10 hymns for my American Gothic, and 10 fables of young ambition and passionate love. What's the significance of the number 10?
I think there isn't any particular significance to 10. I think it's just sort of a form of structure that can give me a format to try and express a concept. And, you know, I think there's always temptations to sort of put too many songs in. But you also want something that's substantial enough. And so I think that sort of gives myself a formal limit to keep myself from droning on for too long.
Yeah, that's the editor in you. That's a good job. So you've described this album, your new album, as, quote, first and foremost, a religious revisionist record. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I think I wanted to write a record that was directly about religion. I mean, I think that there's a temptation to write a record that's kind of sort of hinting at it or bringing in thematic elements, but I wanted it to be about religion. But at the same time, you know, I think there's, for many people who've kind of moved a little bit away from the church, I think there's a temptation to look at religion as in a negative or sarcastic way. And I think I wanted to write something that was religious in feeling, but also sort of very hopeful. And kind of kept that hopeful element, but nevertheless sort of revised it, revised the way that we're thinking about religion and religion music.
So let's listen to another song that deals directly with religion. It's called Gospel of Hope, and it starts with the line, I'm not a religious man, but I can understand religion. Let's listen to a little bit of it.
I'm not a religious man, but I can understand religion. See, my dad was a kid in a war-torn country, enemy forces closing in. Then MacArthur strike them down, send them back to the north, you see. There on the cusp of Jeju Island, I can see my dad as a young man singing, hallelujah, hallelujah. You know, I'm not a religious man, but I can understand religion. Yeah, hallelujah, hallelujah. I can understand religion. I once read a tale about a handsome young Jew from Babylon. See, Daniel was sent to the lion's den in a plot to trick King Darius.
Andrew, tell us a little bit about the process of writing this song.
Well, I think with this song, I think a lot of what I want to try and develop is some kind of sympathy or empathy with religious people who, if you're not necessarily a super religious person, sort of, I think there's nevertheless a way that you can kind of get into understanding religion. And I guess in this song, I guess the way that I was thinking about it was through this idea of miracles, because I think sort of all the things that I'm thinking on in that song have to do with something that sort of seems miraculous in some way or another, either sort of, you know, sections from the Bible or, I guess in one case, sort of my mom's story about recovering from tuberculosis, where, you know, a lot of people got sick and died in Korea sort of after the Korean War. She swears sort of there was a miraculous recovery that happened, which she takes to be sort of very having like a religious origin. And though, you know, I'm not sure what to think of that, it does help me understand in a way. And I think that helps me to understand sort of what religion is about and, you know, in a meaningful way.
And you grew up going to church. Do I have that right?
Yeah. No, we went to I guess a number of different churches, depending on where we were living at the time. Yeah. But in Ames there was Bethesda Lutheran, which is the subject of one of the other tracks on the record. But also, so we would go to Korean church as well.
Now, you've said the record, quote, roughly tracks the great American religious drift of the 21st century, which is kind of a term that you came up with to describe a kind of general loss of faith in many Americans in the last few decades that you've noticed. How did you become aware, you know, of this sense of things, and why did you decide to put a name to it?
Well, I think it's just kind of something that happens. Like, you know, it happens so slowly. I just realized that, you know, after I went to college, I mean, I think this happens to a lot of people. You go to college, you stop going to church as much because part of the reason you went to church was because your parents were, were there and involved in that. And then I noticed, you know, probably then going to graduate school, you know, being a philosopher, we think about religion a fair bit. And I think that was something that I became sort of more conscious in that sense. But then, you know, just sort of growing up and the friends that you talked to, I think it was something that, at least going to church definitely, was something that really stopped being a part of the regular conversation that I was used to when I was in high school and before. And I think I wanted to give a name to it because I think it's something that's important to talk about as at least a result of, you know, at least for me, part of the reason why I started moving away from, or at least organized religion, was because I saw it as being something that was becoming increasingly negative. And I think looking at politics sort of today, sort of it became an entry point for thinking about that, because I think things have gotten pretty negative.
So, you know, your name is Andrew, but you perform under the name St. Lennox. Where did that name come from?
Well, so the name wasn't intended as any kind of religious reference, but, I used to live in Harlem, when I first moved here for law school. I lived in Harlem because my little brother lived in Harlem. So I asked him for some advice on where to live. So I lived with him, by myself in Harlem when I came here for law school. And the train stations, or the subway stations up there, there's a 148th Street Lenox Terminal. If you fall asleep, I think that's the name of the terminal. You'll get there. Mm-hmm. And so I think I had misread the street, ST Street, and then Lenox Terminal. I'd misread it as St. Lennox. And it was kind of just, I was looking for a band name at the time. And I think that kind of misreading is sort of when I realized what I'd done, it sort of seemed like a nice concept of sort of really reading something of meaning and significance into something that sort of seems kind of mundane.
That's a happy mistake. Let's listen to a track about that church you mentioned, the Lutheran church in Ames, where you grew up. The song is called Bethesda. Let's listen to it.
Mm-hmm. back 10 years or so, a local Lutheran church in Ames, furnished with fine wood pews and orange cushions, where we would sit and pray. Stained glass windows of saints and angels' eyes, scoured by the pastoral robes of plenty, phrases from the King James Version lift his words high and mighty. And he says that I should not be afraid. He preaches to me, tells me that love is patient, love is kind. Faith, hope, and love, he says, is a good thing coming round the corner. Just round the corner, tells me to shake hands with all my neighbors. I am your neighbor.
I have to say, you have me dancing in my seat. It's so like, I love it. It's great. So how much of the detail in your songwriting is autobiographical, and how much is maybe just inspired by your life but not taken directly from it?
Ooh, I would say it's all autobiographical, although I think what happens is when I'm writing, I'll misremember things, or maybe I'll remember things in like an idealized way, or maybe I'll just sort of mix several different memories up. But it's all intended to be autobiographical. And you know, I will notice sometimes, going back into a song, I'll notice that there's a mistake. So actually huh. this Bethesda song. there's a mistake in remembering the stained glass windows, because I thought that there were like images of figures in them, but then I went to the website just this last week and I looked at them and there were no images there. There were, you know, a lot of different colors, but you know, I think in a way that's still autobiographical, just not you know, a direct description of the memory. And I think because of that, I tend to keep the mistakes in, because I think they mean something.
So you're not hiring a fact checker for your lyrics anytime soon.
No.
Let's go to a quick break. I'm Rebecca Ibarra, filling in for Allison Stewart, and I'm speaking with musician Andrew Choi, who performs under the name St. Lennox. We're talking about his latest album, 10 Songs of Worship and Praise for Tumultuous Times. We'll continue our conversation and hear more music after we take a quick break. Stay with us. I'm Rebecca Ibarra, filling in for Allison Stewart. This is All of It, and we're speaking with musician Andrew Choi, who performs under the name St. Lennox. We've been talking about his latest album, 10 Songs of Worship and Praise for Our Tumultuous Time. I have a few more questions for you, but first I want to listen to a little bit more music, because this is a listening party. So we have a title track called What Is It Like to Have Children? Let's listen to a bit of that.
One time my mother told me before she was born, her mother had a fever dream about her earthly arrival. A bright and brilliant moon had just descended from above upon their house in a small Korean fishing town. This story informs much of my point of view of having children and the general experience of parenting. And middle-aged hubris and naivete aside, I've always wanted children someday with a good husband in my life.
Hey. So, Andrew, how did you end up, you know, in doing the specific genre, more singer-songwriter, after having classical violin training?
Oh, well, I mean, I stopped doing music for, I'm guessing like 7, maybe 10 years. Hmm. After I stopped the violin, I went to college and I basically stopped. And I didn't really get back into music until I took up karaoke. Hmm. And I guess just the transition from karaoke, I started going to jazz jam clubs. Jazz jam sessions at jazz clubs, and then moving to open mics to just kind of, I was just going to open mics, sing jazz standards. And I think I, at the open mics, that's where a lot of singer-songwriters were. And I was like, you know what? everybody else is writing their own material, so I will do that as well. And I think that's the trend. It's very circuitous, but that's what the transition was, I guess.
But why didn't you focus on music in college?
I mean, I had done so much violin, you know, up through high school, and you know, you're at that age where like you're becoming an adult, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to go to college, and I'm going to be a whole new person, and I'm going to be all these things that I really want to be, and like everything that I, you know, don't, it's not that I didn't like the violin, but things, you know, I just want to change. And I remember the conductor at Princeton called me up the first day that I got in. He was like, so, you know, you're going to do the orchestra. And I said, nope. Sorry. And I was kind of done with it. Just, I don't know.
Huh. And have you been at all surprised by how your music has been received once you decided to, you know, go back into music?
I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, like I did music for such a long time. I think there's a lot of the skill set that comes back. It is very different though. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, a few years ago, my violin teacher at Juilliard, he came to one of my shows. And I was very surprised, and he came, and it was way too loud for him, but I talked with him afterwards, and he told me that the vibrato that I used playing the violin, it was the same vibrato that he heard in my voice.
Huh.
It was, so I think there's a lot that's translating there, but I don't necessarily think about it too much.
So you have a blog on your website where you often write about issues in the music industry, and you have this one post about anti-Asian American bias in the indie music journalism. And in that one, you write about how few Asian American men get coverage in music writing, and you lament that, quote, a lowly attorney is required to emerge from his office every few years a la Kung Fu Hustle to help secure coverage for the male Asian American contingent. How often have you found yourself pigeonholed in the music industry because of your identity?
I mean, I think it's a very strange industry to be in. I mean, it's similar to, you know, I saw an article about movies, and you know, they talk about the same issue in movies as well. I think it's hard to find sort of a discrete instance where there was a very significant problem, but sort of taking everything all together, like it's just, you look at the industry as a whole, you can just crunch the numbers and say, well, look, there's a lack of representation here. I'm not sure what else to say about that, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I also want to talk about one of your posts from last year that argues for this idea of a public service musician. What does that term mean? Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess what I had meant by that is that, you know, there's this idea that, you know, people want music to be their full-time job. They want, that's like an ideal that a lot of people have. They want to have all the money that they make that supports them in life be something that they got sort of as a result of their musical talents and actions. And I guess I wanted to just try and sort of subvert that narrative and think about, you know, for somebody like me, I don't do music as my main thing, but nevertheless, it's an important thing that I do. And I guess for me, an analog is, you know, I do a lot of pro bono and public interest work as an attorney. And I think it was a good way to think about, you know, being that being something that I'm doing, that I'm providing a benefit to society by sort of putting music out there. And it's not what I think oftentimes ends up being the general narrative for people who don't do it full time. You know, the idea is that, oh, well, you know, it's a secondary thing that you're doing. It's like a side hustle, or it's a hobby. And I, you know, there's no reason why it needs to be looked at that way. Especially with, you know, I release records. There are many music writers that have great things to say about them that are on a par or even better than other musicians that are doing it full time. And there's no necessary relationship between doing music full time and being able to put out a great record. And so I think that was my way of sort of rethinking sort of what is it that people who have full time jobs that are doing music as an additional thing. And I think the concept of public interest or public benefit was a way for me to draw that out.
Well, let's listen to some more of that music. This track is called Our Tumultuous Times.
I had trouble falling asleep again. I heard warnings of a new disaster. There's a new story about deceit and corruption. There's a very bad man in the government. Kira said to me, it's the end of the world, and she's not even joking about it. What do we do now when disaster's coming for you? Maybe pick up a megaphone and scream and shout. Tear it all down and start it all.
Andrew, you have a very distinct way of writing and singing. There aren't many rhymes in your lyrics, and the words often sound like they're just kind of like tumbling out of you. Where would you say that your songwriting influences come from?
Well, I mean, I would tell you the bands that I liked when I was growing up, but they don't really sound like how I sound. I mean, I was a big REM fan. Uh-huh. And I don't think he's obsessed with rhyme. I mean, I would also say that, you know, I was, especially with regards to this record, I was thinking a lot about the music that's sung, not the hymns, but like there's like ritual music that's sung by the pastor sort of in between. And there's a way that they have of putting like a whole bunch of words, and they've got to stuff all those syllables into like just a certain number of, notes. And I think that's something that it must have deeply influenced my writing, because I hear a lot of similarities between that. Although I never really thought of it, I guess it was more just that I had a lot to say and I had only so many notes. And so it was probably just the same circumstances that pastors end up with. And so you've got a similar result.
Let's listen to another song. It's called Teenage Eyes, which samples a Dwight Eisenhower speech.
There is only one real peace now, and that is peace for all time. Now there are three imperatives of peace, three requirements that the prudent man must face with unwinking will. The first imperative is the elementary necessity of maintaining our own national strength, moral, economic, and military. Today, we are competing for men's hearts and minds.
Bird calls in a far field, another poet expressed under dance stage lights. Yeah, Colton Miller, High Life and Bar Tap. Tickets say, here's a clue to on a Wednesday night. Here's middle-aged Tom coming from flyover country. Says he used to be in this one grunge rock band. Yeah, neighborhood dogs wrecked his dad's garage. Hung posters at school and on the utility poles. Hey, yeah!
Andrew, what was behind the decision to sample this speech?
You know, I wasn't sure at first myself. But I think the reason that it kind of fit for me was the song is kind of about sort of trying to recapture lost youth, because I'm running into, you know, like a middle-aged gentleman, a businessman at an open mic and talking about that. And I understand sort of this idea of wanting to recapture youth. I think it's something that a lot of songs go into quite well. But I guess when I listen to Dwight D. Eisenhower, and this is probably just myself, you know, he's talking about world peace and how they're going to try and sort of fix everything, sort of especially dealing with like the nuclear weapons and whatnot. But I guess looking back at him sort of many, many years later, I think that he just sounds so naive. Not that he's a naive person, but just that he can't possibly understand how complicated things are going to get. And I think I think looking at that, it kind of put into check or put it into context this competing narrative that's happening in the foreground of, you know, this traditional sort of trying to recapture lost youth. Wouldn't it be great if, you know, it's like the simpler times narrative and trying to put that into context. And I think that's what the Eisenhower speech did for me.
Now, you're credited as the sole singer, writer, and instrumentalist on this album. It's something that actually really makes sense to me, you know, in this very lonely time of the pandemic. But, you know, in the future, are you at all interested in collaboration, or do you prefer to work alone?
You know, I think that collaboration is something that I'm very open to and intent. It's I think it's difficult for me, though, partly because I guess I'm probably a little bit of a control freak. But I think the other thing is just, you know, just I've got so much stuff to do that it's kind of a big time saver if I do everything myself. But yeah, no, I'm always open to sort of working with people. And, you know, it's something that I need to learn. And I think it's something that'll help me grow as a musician in the future. So I definitely intend to do that. And we'll see if that happens.
So I want to go out on the album's last song. Andrew, you're going to have to correct my pronunciation in this. Super Cameo Candy?
Yeah, that's how I pronounce it.
Where does that name come from?
So the Super Cameo Candy is, and somebody out there can correct me if I'm wrong. So it's a neutrino detector, and it has a sister project in South Dakota called the Homestake Experiment, which I visited on my honeymoon with my husband. And I think going there, it was such, I don't know how to explain it. It was such just a great, hopeful experience for me. And just, you know, they're detecting neutrinos and sort of figuring out the structure of the universe. Mm-hmm. And I guess that concept, it really struck something in me that I think was a religious feeling. And it's funny because I was listening to the song last week, and I realized that I think it borrows a lot of thematic and spiritual elements from another song called The Rainbow Connection. Hmm. And ever since I thought about that, I can't unthink that anymore.
And for people who aren't as sciencey like me, did a quick Google search, and neutrino is a type of particle. But let's go out on this song, Super Cameo Candy.
Deep in the woods of South Dakota, there I was wandering through the mountains, dazed and awestruck in all its splendor. I've been stumbling since then. Into the hills they brought their gifts and sacraments, such as pure and holy water. I've been stumbling a lot these past few days. I've been humbled a lot since then. Super Cameo Candy, I'm just a humble servant for you. I hope that you'll find what
I've been speaking with musician Andrew Choi, who performs under the name St. Lennox. We've been talking about his latest album, 10 Songs of Worship and Praise for Our Tumultuous Times. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us on All of It.
Well, thank you for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.